I chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We've got quite a program tonight. This is July 4th, and I want to welcome everyone to the program, and I want to wish everyone a happy July 4th, which was the day that the Declaration of Independence was signed, sealed, and delivered in Philadelphia, written by Thomas Jefferson. But anyway, I want to welcome everyone to the program, and we're going to start off because of July 4th, 2020, part of the speech, an excerpt of the speech that President Trump gave at Mount Rushmore. Here we go now with President Trump.
We gather tonight to herald the most important day in the history of nations, July 4th, 1776. At those words, every American heart should swell with pride. Every American family should cheer with delight, and every American patriot should be filled with joy, because each of you lives in the most magnificent country in the history of the world, and it will soon be greater than ever before. Our founders launched not only a revolution in government, but a revolution in the pursuit of justice, equality, liberty, and prosperity. No nation has done more to advance the human condition than the United States of America. And no people have done more to promote human progress than the citizens of our great nation. It was all made possible by the courage of 56 patriots who gathered in Philadelphia 244 years ago and signed the Declaration of Independence. They enshrined a divine truth that changed the world forever when they said, "All men are created equal." These immortal words set in motion the unstoppable march of freedom. Our founders boldly declared that we are all endowed with the same divine rights given us by our Creator in heaven, and that which God has given us, we will allow no one ever to take away, ever. In 1776 represented the culmination of thousands of years of Western civilization and the triumph of not only spirit, but of wisdom, philosophy, and reason. And yet, as we meet here tonight, there is a growing danger that threatens every blessing our ancestors fought so hard for, struggled, they bled to secure. Our nation is witnessing a merciless campaign to wipe out our history, defame our heroes, erase our values, and indoctrinate our children. Yeah. angry mobs are trying to tear down statues of our founders, deface our most sacred memorials, and unleash a wave of violent crime in our cities. Many of these people have no idea why they are doing this, but some know exactly what they are doing. They think the American people are weak and soft and submissive. But no, the American people are strong and proud, and they will not allow our country and all of its values, history, and culture to be taken from them. One of their political weapons is cancel culture, driving people from their jobs, shaming dissenters, and demanding total submission from anyone who disagrees. This is the very definition of totalitarianism, and it is completely alien to our culture and to our values, and it has absolutely no place in the United States of America. This attack on our liberty, our magnificent liberty, must be stopped, and it will be stopped very quickly. We will expose this dangerous movement, protect our nation's children, end this radical assault, and preserve our beloved American way of life. In our schools, our newsrooms, even our corporate boardrooms, there is a new far-left fascism that demands absolute allegiance. If you do not speak its language, perform its rituals, recite its mantras, and follow its commandments, then you will be censored, banished, blacklisted, persecuted, and punished. It's not going to happen to us. Make no mistake, this left-wing cultural revolution is designed to overthrow the American Revolution. In so doing, they would destroy the very civilization that rescued billions from poverty, disease, violence, and hunger, and that lifted humanity to new heights of achievement, discovery, and progress. To make this possible, they are determined to tear down every statue, symbol, and memory of our national heritage. Sure. That's very true, actually. That is why I am deploying federal law enforcement to protect our monuments, arrest the rioters, and prosecute offenders to the fullest extent of the law. I am pleased to report that yesterday, federal agents arrested the suspected ringleader of the attack on the statue of the great Andrew Jackson in Washington, D.C. And in addition, hundreds more have been arrested. Under the executive order I signed last week, pertaining to the Veterans Memorial Preservation and Recognition Act and other laws, people who damage or deface federal statues or monuments will get a minimum of 10 years in prison. And obviously that includes our beautiful Mount Rushmore. Our people have a great memory. They will never forget the destruction of statues and monuments to George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Ulysses S. Grant, abolitionists, and many others. The violent mayhem we have seen in the streets and cities that are run by liberal Democrats in every case is the predictable result of years of extreme indoctrination and bias in education, journalism, and other cultural institutions. Against every law of society and nature, our children are taught in school to hate their own country and to believe that the men and women who built it were not heroes, but that were villains. The radical view of American history is a web of lies. All perspective is removed. Every virtue is obscured. Every motive is twisted. Every fact is distorted. And every flaw is magnified until the history is purged and the record is disfigured beyond all recognition. This movement is openly attacking the legacies of every person on Mount Rushmore. They defile the memory of Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. Today, we will set history and history's records straight. Before these figures were immortalized in stone, they were American giants in full flesh and blood, gallant men whose intrepid deeds unleashed the greatest leap of human advancement the world has ever known. Tonight I will tell you, and most importantly, the youth of our nation, the true stories of these great, great men. From head to toe, George Washington represented the strength, grace, and dignity of the American people. From a small volunteer force of citizen farmers, he created the Continental Army out of nothing and rallied them to stand against the most powerful military on earth. Through 8 long years, through the brutal winter at Valley Forge, through setback after setback on the field of battle, he led those patriots to ultimate triumph. When the army had dwindled to a few thousand men at Christmas of 1776, when defeat seemed absolutely certain, he took what remained of his forces on a daring nighttime crossing of the Delaware River. They marched through 9 miles of frigid darkness, many without boots on their feet, leaving a trail of blood in the snow. In the morning, they seized victory at Trenton. After forcing the surrender of the most powerful empire on the planet, at Yorktown, General Washington did not claim power, but simply returned to Mount Vernon as a private citizen. When called upon again, he presided over the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia and was unanimously elected our first president. When he stepped down after 2 terms, his former adversary, King George, called him the greatest man of the age. He remains first in our hearts to this day. For as long as Americans love this land, we will honor and cherish the father of our country, George Washington. He will never be removed, abolished, and most of all, he will never be forgotten. Thomas Jefferson, the great Thomas Jefferson, was 33 years old when he traveled north to Pennsylvania and brilliantly authored one of the greatest treasures of human history, the Declaration of Independence. He also drafted Virginia's Constitution and conceived and wrote the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, a model for our cherished First Amendment. After serving as the first Secretary of State and then Vice President, he was elected to the presidency. He ordered American warriors to crush Barbary pirates. He doubled the size of our nation with the Louisiana Purchase. And he sent the famous explorers Lewis and Clark into the West on a daring expedition to the Pacific Ocean. He was an architect, an inventor, a diplomat, a scholar, the founder of one of the world's great universities, and an ardent defender of liberty. Americans will forever admire the author of American freedom, Thomas Jefferson. And he too will never, ever be abandoned by us. Abraham Lincoln, the savior of our Union, was a self-taught country lawyer who grew up in a log cabin on the American frontier. The first Republican president, he rose to high office from obscurity based on a force and clarity of his anti-slavery convictions, very, very strong convictions. He signed the law that built the Transcontinental Railroad. He signed the Homestead Act, given to some incredible scholars as simply defined ordinary citizens free land to settle anywhere in the American West. And he led the country through the darkest hours of American history, giving every ounce of strength that he had to ensure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people did not perish from this earth. He served as Commander-in-Chief of the U.S. Armed Forces during our bloodiest war, the struggle that saved our Union and extinguished the evil of slavery. Over 600,000 died in that war. More than 20,000 were killed or wounded in a single day in Antietam. At Gettysburg, 157 years ago, the Union bravely withstood an assault of nearly 15,000 men and threw back Pickett's charge. Lincoln won the Civil War. He issued the Emancipation Proclamation. He led the passage of the 13th Amendment, abolishing slavery for all time. And ultimately, his determination to preserve our nation and our Union cost him his life. For as long as we live, Americans will uphold and revere the immortal memory of President Abraham Lincoln.
There's still some very, very loyal, patriotic people out here. And I know what he said in there about the indoctrination of our youth and so forth, they have already been indoctrinated, and it took decades of teachings that have been changed and the perception about what the country was all about. We have that 1619 project, you know, that was created out of the New York Times there and so forth. That's not really what America was all about to start with. We have had shortcomings and weaknesses and so forth and failures. But the very system that we have has enabled some of the minority groups to attain certain rights and so forth that they were denied earlier by the system. But anyway, what we have next is Alex Jones warning us about a looming civil war. Here we go with Alex.
It's now official. Establishment mouthpieces like CNN and the New York Times say America is in a leftist revolution and the American flag and George Washington are coming down. America is in a civil war. Now, who told me about that before? Turns out the mainstream media has memorialized all of the detailed warnings I've given in the last 3.5 years, and we're about to lay them out. What is a globalist billionaire? Well, they're just that. They're a billionaire that doesn't believe in the nation state and that believes in a corporate authoritarian world government. You've seen George Soros and a whole constellation of these guys in the last 3.5 years since Trump got elected, openly spending hundreds of millions of dollars a month trying to kick off revolution. And we've written articles about it. We've done video reports. We've had guests on that were inside these organizations. Project Veritas has got an undercover video. This is going on. But it's really hilarious in a sick way if you go back starting about 3 years ago. All the different mainstream media articles in major publications, Washington Post, New York Times, you name it, saying Alex Jones is completely insane. He claims the left wants to pull down the American flag and George Washington. He claims that they want to cancel July 4th. He claims that they're going to go out and start burning and pillaging and trying to create a chain reaction of looting that will drive President Trump from office. Ha, ha, ha. And, oh, they made comedy videos about it. There was big memes on Reddit and on Twitter about it. Here's some of those headlines and articles the last few years that memorialize the videos and articles and reports that we put out detailing this. And now you wake up in July 2020 and it's all here. They were beta testing it before, as I said they were, to then roll it out with a big push later. This is the big push. Here's a big story out of the Washington Post a few years ago. A short history of Alex Jones claiming that the left is about to start a civil war. December 2017, Alex Jones and Roger Stone train for the next civil war. Let's see a clip from that.
Up against the wall, commies. Hold it.
October 2017, Ted Nugent joins Alex Jones. The left is trying to start a civil war. I mean, that's what they said they were doing with billionaires funding them. September 2017, breaking, left openly planning civil war. And they mock my report, but don't show you the report where we show them saying it with billionaire funding. Second Civil War, how a wild conspiracy theory became a July 4th Twitter meme, and how they made fun of me and said I was crazy. They were saying 2 years ago they were planning to have a civil war on July 4th and tear down the statues and burn things down and burn down the White House and drive Trump from office. I mean, that was in the news. But, oh, Jones is crazy. No such thing is happening. Now it's all memorialized and all over the country in blue states and blue cities. July 4th has been canceled, and we're told the American flag should be taken down. Everybody sucks, and the cities are burning. Alex Jones said Democrats would start the next civil war on July 4th, and Twitter did what Twitter does best, made fun of us. Here's another one. Civil War post by right-wing radio host roundly mocked on Twitter, ABC News. So this is just another example of how you get not just tomorrow's news today, but next year's news today at InfoWars. Yes, I know it sounds radical and crazy to say that there are secret pedophile rings with thousands of kidnapped children blackmailing thousands of prominent individuals. It's all public now. I was told this by high-level patriots in the FBI 25 years ago. I didn't just come up with that. Of course it was real. You think I'm just going to make that up? I exposed the whole world government plan, how they used a canned virus to bring in a police state. We've laid it all out because I study what the New World Order itself says. I didn't look into a crystal ball and imagine everything that's happening and them trying to cancel 4th of July now and calling it a revolution day to overthrow the country. They said they were going to do it. And on hundreds of major stories, we're dead on. And people keep asking, how are you dead on? Because when they're building the revolution and preparing it, they don't want people to really know about it. They just want it to be in their circles. They didn't want a Paul Revere to warn years before, so they criticize it. But now that they're going fully operational, you see, they're more than happy to admit it's a revolution. It's an overthrow. So ask yourselves, are you going to sit there idly by while they overthrow the country and bankrupt it and destroy our futures? Or are you going to stand up and speak out and demand that these chicken-necked politicians and these cowardly corporations stop lining up to virtue signal the destruction of our republic? We've got a really good shot at getting Trump reelected and down the road defeating the New World Order. But ladies and gentlemen, it's really a fight between good and evil, and it's a fight that goes on in our hearts and our souls. And if we don't find God again and get back to being decent people and get back to being politically involved and start standing up to evil, there's no level of appeasement that will ever stop them. These globalists and their minions want everything because they're corrupt and they're bad news. So remember what July 4th is really all about and thank your lucky stars you were born in this country. Because it's not perfect, but compared to other nations, we have incredible freedom to seek your dreams, incredible freedom to live how you want. So let's save the republic while there's still time, because the alternative is absolute enslavement and tyranny. Thank you all. God bless. Have a great 4th of July.
We still have a lot of good things going for this country. And Alex was stating that towards the end of this statement that he made. But on the other hand, we have had a tremendous uprising by people that have been indoctrinated over decades. And now we have outbreaks that are still occurring, like in Portland. Over this last few nights there in Portland, there's been chaos and rioting. And one jewelry store owner lost everything they had, $1 million worth of inventory. And so the very mayor there in Portland that was easygoing against Antifa and other radical groups on the left is now experiencing a hellacious blowback by the very radical groups that he was easy on, and he was down on any, you could say, very conservative groups that were going up against that radical left, communist left. So this is what's going on out here in this country, and we just got to try to wake up. Now Mr. Anderson lost his son. He's coming up next, an interview by Hannity, Sean Hannity. And Mr. Anderson lost his son in that CHOP area there in Seattle. And this is an excerpt of that. I'm going to put up click-offs where you can listen to the whole interview at your leisure. But here we go with a clip of this man that lost his son inside of there. And nobody replied to him and brought him the news of his son. And neither did anyone meet him at the hospital. This is very, very disgraceful. And they're just trying to make this a non-event. I'm going to put up a little paragraph written by an activist out of South America about nobodies. But I'll put that up on our site. So come in to thesecrettruth.com and read that little excerpt of that paragraph about nobodies. And it sort of explains what the media and everybody did in Seattle did and denied this young 19-year-old person an identity that his dad he loved his son, and he lost his son. Here we go with Sean Hannity in this interview.
All right, joining us now, he's the father of the young man we mentioned earlier, Horace Lorenzo Anderson. He was murdered in Seattle's CHOP zone, autonomous zone, or summer free love zone on June 20th. Horace Lorenzo Anderson Sr. is with us, along with a family rep who is the executive director of Not This Time. Andre Taylor is with us. Sir, I speak for everyone I know watching this program tonight. We are so sorry for the loss of your son. And I don't know how one, I'm a father, has a son that's 21 and a daughter that's 18, right around the age of your son. And this happened, 10 days ago, and the city still didn't do anything to protect its citizenry. Your thoughts, sir?
I think they should have just been, man, this, I mean, it's incredible. You know, my son's 19, you know, I mean, they should have been did something about this a long time ago. And I don't, you know, like I say, I'm not, I understand Black Lives Matter and everything was going on and everything, but that's not my movement right now. My movement is let them know that was my son.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Horace Lorenzo Anderson was my son. That I don't know. I'm not with all this, whatever's going on.
Politics or
nothing? None of that. I don't know nothing about that. I don't even know nothing about that. All I know is this is my son, and I love him, and I've been having him. Man, it's been my son, and it's just incredible. And I don't know. That should have been gone a long time ago.
He has a concern about the fact that he was never, no one ever came and spoke to him.
Nobody ever. I never talked to, only way I found out, I see my son the night before he passed away. He was on the couch. I seen him, and he was like he was about to go to sleep. I seen him. I laughed at him. We tickled a little bit. He stayed with me all day, you know, because he stays with me anyway. That's my guy. And we laughed, and I said, I'm going to sleep. I went to sleep, and only way I found out was just two of his friends, just two friends that just happened to be up there. And they came and told me they weren't even from Seattle. Now, mind you, I haven't heard the police department. They never came. My son's address, his ID, him personally, you know, him as a person, he still had, somebody should have came, knocked on my door, and still to this day should have been like, come to talk to me and let me know about my son. To this day, I don't know nothing. I'm just still sitting here. I haven't heard nothing from nobody. Ain't nobody contacted me.
You haven't heard from the mayor? You haven't heard from the mayor? You haven't heard from the governor? You didn't hear from anybody?
I haven't heard from the mayor. I haven't heard from the police department. I just now recently, just because we went on TV, they reached out to me and let me know what they're doing now. But my son's been, you know, he's been deceased now for, what, two weeks somewhere in there? I don't even remember. I'm just so, my days is like, every day is like every day. It's the same day. So it's like, I'm confused and I'm, you know, but I understand that, you know, whatever's going on. But even at the time, even when my son passed away, when I went to the hospital, there was no detectives there. There was nobody there, no media there. There was nothing. He was nobody. He was just like, we was just there and we just sat there and I said, man, why are we sitting there? There's nobody else here. It's like they didn't care. It didn't matter. I haven't heard from the mayor. I haven't heard from the police department. I haven't from no city and nobody. Nobody. Only thing I heard from is what you guys is hearing from me now. That's it.
You know, I saw this picture. Yeah. Then I looked for the video. This is a picture of you I'm holding up. It was in the Daily Wire. And what I see in this picture, if we can pan in close, if we can't, I understand. What I saw in this picture was a fellow father with a son around the same age as my son and about the same age as my daughter. And then I read the article and I read what you said. And you actually said, you're not sleeping. You could see my eyes have been crying. I'm trying not to cry on TV. And then you went on and you explained how you could not understand how they allowed this lawlessness to go on. Now you're taking it to an entirely new level. Nobody had the decency to call you, and I assume you heard the mayor out there calling this the summer of love and the media reporting it as a festive zone, one big block party.
Yeah, to this day, right now, they still haven't called me right now. I've been on TV. They still haven't called me. Nobody hasn't called me, and they haven't reached out to be like, my condolence, nothing. I don't understand. I never understood. You know, all I know is now they're acting now. This is today. This is 3 weeks later. If I would have never even came on TV, that would still be going on right now.
Let me just say, Hannity, I don't want to make this no kind of political statement or political
situation. You can say anything you want, sir. Sir, you can say anything you want on my show.
Yes.
You can criticize me. I don't care. I want this to stop.
I don't need to criticize you. You were very gracious. He was very gracious in offering your condolences if nobody else had.
Yes.
You offered yours, and that's not a political statement.
Yes.
You compared his situation to your own with your daughter's, And that's big. That means something. And I appreciate you for that. But what I don't want to do is get into who's this and who's the fault and who that, because we don't really know. CHOP, yeah, I believe, should have been dismantled at least a week before.
Yes.
When the first violence happened, we should have looked at it a little differently. And that wasn't done, because I understand navigating in a time in our country that, from the George Floyd situation, people were a little bit hesitant on how to act and not to be the one to feel like they're trying to put down young people's voices. And so I understand that as well. I just want to let you know personally, beyond all the politics, that I appreciate how you reached out to Horace and you said how you understood his condition. I think that's real big of you, and I appreciate that too.
Yes.
You know,
I appreciate it too, because that's probably the only thing I've ever heard from anybody that's, I haven't heard that from anybody else, you know, and I, you know,
that's heartbreaking.
We're on TV, and I've never been on TV, so I don't know how to be on TV, but my son was a child of special needs. He was born at 25 weeks, you know, so, you know, they compare him, they trying to want to put him this, do that, but, you know, he was a child, he had, you know, developmental delays, you know what I'm saying, so he's easily to manipulate, you know, you can tell him something, come on, he'll come on, you know, he's one of those trying to, type of child, you know, so.
Had a very influenced by others.
Yeah, easily yeah, influenced, you know what I'm saying, easily. He was sitting on my couch, I went to bed, I seen my son. When I left that night, I seen him, I came home, I seen him, I went to, man, I seen him, and I just said, I love you, man, I'm going to sleep, and, you know, that everything else is just seems like
a blur.
Yeah, I don't even, man, I'm numb. I'm still numb today. I got to bury my son tomorrow, you know, and it's just been a lot going on. And my whole thing is, my whole life is, man, this is incredible. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, I still this day, it's been almost 2 weeks. I haven't heard from nobody. Has nobody called? They still ain't. Ain't nobody called me or try to find me. And his ID is my ID. So his number is my number. So they can, it's easy to come for the, you know, detective and say, hey, excuse me, knock on my door, excuse me, let me tell you what happened about your son,
about your son,
or let me, I don't know nothing. I had to find my son. They wouldn't even let me see my son that night. It took me a whole week before I can see my son.
And then let me just say that he's in trauma right now.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
You weren't allowed to see your son for a week? Please.
They wouldn't let me. I went to the hospital, and they said that we couldn't see him. They just said we couldn't see him. There was, now, you know, when I go there, I'm going there, I'm looking for a detective, somebody tell me something. But when I get there, there's nobody. I mean, the hospital is blank. It's silence. I'm going like, what's going on? You know, so I go ask the lady, and she tells me, hold on. So I wait. I couldn't go in, so I'm waiting for a long time. And I finally, she tells me to come in, and then the doctor comes, tells me, all the only thing he tells me is my son's deceased. I'm like, well, can I see him? Is it my son? Because you got to realize, you know, at this time, I'm going like, is it really my son? You know, I want to know, is it my son? Mm-hmm. You know, because this could be somebody else's child, you know. But, you know, I'm in my head, I'm going like, yeah, it's mine, because everybody's saying this. But in my heart, I'm going like, you know, I need to see him for, you know, I need to see him one time. So I can see him. I couldn't see him that day. That was Saturday. It took all the way till Thursday. I just seen him just last week. Just Thursday. And they had to, whatever they did to him and make him so they presentable, whatever it was. But I need to, you know, I got to finally see him. And then in my heart, I knew it was my son now. This is my son. Because, you know, I wouldn't want nobody else's son. And, man, this is incredible. These kids and the kids that passed, whatever, what happened the other day, you know, all this on this child. Man, this is incredible. These are kids, man. I'm 50 years old. Man, these are kids, man. They should have been stopped this a long time ago. It's starting to get, excuse me, but it's getting to a point, you know, where, you know, it's getting.
Gotcha.
I'm so sorry.
Mr. Anderson wasn't treated right by the authorities up there. And the mayor had made a mistake by not going in earlier, possibly. And there were two. There was a 16-year-old and a 19-year-old killed before they closed down the chop. And finally, they did go in there this week. But they waited too long, according to some people. And this man lost his 9-year-old son because possibly the mayor and all that waited too long. See, she described it as a block party at one time. So how off the wall is that? Now, coming next is an interview that Tucker Carlson had with Dr. Siegel. And Dr. Siegel, he lays out the WHO and Fauci and them and other people that are part of the WHO, that misled us about this virus. And this is a very, very interesting statement. Dr. Siegel is one of the most outstanding men in this country. He's beyond approach. He has a tremendous reputation, and he's a solid person and a very fine person. Here we go. Interview Tucker Carlson had with Dr. Siegel. Here we go now.
When the Wuhan coronavirus first began spreading across China and then around the world, we knew very little about it. Many were skeptical that the Chinese government could be trusted to describe what was really happening, but those skeptics were assured by one man, Dr. Tony Fauci. China, he told us, was a model of transparency.
China has been known to fiddle with their stats before. Do you trust what they are telling us about this illness?
From what I can see right now, they really are being much, much more transparent than what happened with SARS, where they really kept back information for a while. It was embarrassing to them. They're really transparent now. They put the sequence of the virus up on the public database right away. So in that respect, they've been transparent.
Oh, you can trust China. Definitely. Whatever China said, Tony Fauci reassured us, you can trust. And then the head of the World Health Organization chimed in to agree.
The Chinese government is to be congratulated for the extraordinary measures it has taken to contain the outbreak. China is actually setting a new standard for outbreak response, and it's not an exaggeration.
All lies, of course. In the case of the World Health Organization, this is an organization beholden to the Chinese government. Recently, WHO quietly revised its timeline of how the outbreak began. Previously, they told us that China self-reported an outbreak of unusual pneumonia in Wuhan. Now, WHO admits that it learned of the outbreak from Chinese media reports and accounts by Wuhan doctors posted to a website based here in the U.S. World Health Organization had to wait 3 whole days before getting more information from the Chinese government. Dr. Mark Siegel is a Fox Medical contributor, our man on this topic. He joins us tonight. Doctor, thanks for coming on. What do you make of this?
Tucker, I'm here to report on this big lie that you're mentioning. What lie coming out of the People's Republic of China and lie propagated by the World Health Organization? Dial it back to December 31st, 2019, a date that will go down in history where a viral pneumonia is first being reported out of China. Well, the Chinese government is supposed to inform the World Health Organization about that, right? And the timeline, the 19 coronavirus, bought the world time. Those words will be remembered in history. But meanwhile, there was no transparency going on, and the World Health Organization was actually working together with the People's Republic of China, not just Tedros, but also the head of communicable diseases at the WHO, Dr. Ren, who actually was a public health official in China for 30 years. And this went forward, and now finally, Representative McCall, Michael McCall, leader of the funding that we've cut off, here's my prescription. Here's the road back, Tedros. It's called Truth Serum. Take it for the weekend and see what happens.
Amen. Tucker? Health authorities should not lie. That's a baseline, I would say. Dr. Siegel, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Chuck.
So who told Tedros takes Truth Serum? Tedros, yeah, it's good for you. You know what I mean? That WHO, they totally misled us, the World Health Organization. And they lied and falsely passed on those lies, and they misled us and into a false sense of security initially about this virus. So we can't trust the Chinese communists, Chi-coms, because the figures that they put about, you know, in Wuhan, who they lost, and they've been milking our people here for information and stealing all of our secrets, our trade secrets, our patents, and reverse engineering things that we sent over there. They are despicable. And I've interviewed a man by the name of Wei Xinjiang years ago, and he is a fighter. He got put in prison twice, that a total of about 18 years in Chinese prisons. And Wei Xinjiang knows what the Chinese communists are all about. And now he's in Washington, D.C. with his Wei Xinjiang Foundation trying to fight the Chinese communists and trying to restore freedom and democracy in China, of which they lack any of that. They are a tyrannical, communist, left-wing, hard-shell, Maoist, hard-line communist government. And they don't care about human rights or freedoms and liberties or anything else. And they run roughshod over their people. So that's really what they're all about. And it's time that the American public started waking up to what was going on. Now, coming up next is a short clip about Ghislaine Maxwell, the girl that was involved with Jeffrey Epstein. And her father, Robert Maxwell, was a big communications publishing magnate at one time that was found floating off the edge of his yacht years ago. But anyway, Ghislaine Maxwell will be coming up next. She's been arrested up in New Hampshire. And she may be, you know, telling all about her involvement with Jeffrey Epstein. We don't know. But people are afraid for her safety. So here we go with this interview now.
Ghislaine Maxwell is ready to talk. According to reports, Jeffrey Epstein's accomplice is set to cooperate with the FBI after being arrested yesterday. And experts say Maxwell has every incentive to name names. Nancy Grace thinks it could mean bad news for many powerful men, including Prince Andrews.
All they've got to do is keep her alive, all right? Don't let her commit suicide. Don't let her be killed. Keep her alive, because I guarantee you right now, there are a lot of powerful people, men, in the U.S. and Britain, who are quaking in their boots about what Ghislaine Maxwell may say about them, all the way from Wall Street to Washington.
Emily, I'm going to go to you first, former federal prosecutor. Who are these other men, and can they keep her safe?
I'll answer your second question first. I hope that the government keeps her safe. I hope that for the same reasons that I hope they protect all inmates. I think that it is obvious she is a wealth of knowledge and information for this international underage sex scheme that occurred for years and years. And if I may point a couple things out to about her case that is different than Epstein's. First of all, the fact that she does have all of that information, or undoubtedly does not erase her own culpability, and the fact that she played an incredibly insidious and active part of recruiting and grooming and abusing these girls. And in my opinion, an even more insidious role, because it was she that lent that reassuring presence to them, that normalized sexual behavior, so that when it came time for the abuse, the girls felt safe with her around there and had been normalized that to that type of what ultimately became toxic and incredibly violent behavior. The three incidents alleged in the indictment by the government against her took place in the 90s, by the way, and Epstein's took place in 2002 through 2005. And the difference is that in the Federal Sex Trafficking Act, when it involves minors, there's no statute of limitations, meaning that clearly the incidents that the government is prosecuting here and charging, that there is ironclad evidence in their eyes of minors' acts and activities in the conspiracy and whatnot, and especially, of course, her 2016 perjury counts. And I think that's a really big deal here, because it means that they wouldn't bring it without that type of leverage they feel they have. And final point, much has been made about, oh no, what if she gets a plea deal because of this volume of information that she can put forth? But plea deals do not, they are convictions. So I think that we should reserve a type of apprehension about that. The 99.7% conviction rate the federal government has is mostly due to those plea agreements. And so certainly what if they offer that to her, any type of charge she would accept conviction for would be 100% grotesque, because that's what her charges are.
Yeah, she would have to confess. Brian Yenes did an exclusive interview with a 14-year-old. Well, she's not 14 now, but at 14 years old, she was assaulted. And she talks about how she was gang raped and they tried to intimidate her after she got pregnant. I mean, what are they going to do here?
Exactly. What they did is they point that she is just as bad as Epstein, according to this young girl who's now a young lady now. And she wants to see justice paid, to send a message and to also help her healing, because when you have that type of experience as a teen, logic tells you it's going to be very tough having a normal life. I have a couple of things that Geraldo is uniquely equipped to answer. Why would somebody with so many options choose to come back to New Hampshire knowing that she's facing life in prison or worse? Why wouldn't she stay in a place that we couldn't even get her out of anyway? Like Prince Andrew is cowering in the corner of some palace. And she decides to come back as if she really thinks she needs to hide in New Hampshire. She could hide anywhere. What do you think's going on here?
Well, I think that the fact that she was still in the United States indicates that maybe our view of the strength of the case against her is wrong. I mean, I would have used her staying in the country, were I her attorney, to argue that she was not a flight risk, that she could be given bail or house arrest until her case was heard. Why she decided to stay, and when you buy a 156-acre spread in New Hampshire, a relatively sparsely populated state, it's not exactly a subtle move. She used GMAX as her address. Her initials in essence. So there's more going on there. You know, I detest what Epstein purportedly did and what this woman allegedly did in aiding and abetting the abuse of these children. But what I see as the real lesson of this morality tale is the toxic impact of money. Why did Bill Clinton want to hang around with Jeffrey Epstein? Why did Prince Andrew want to hide out in Epstein's apartment, which happens to be the largest private residence in Manhattan? What about all of these others, Harvard University and all of these prestigious institutions? Why did they court him? Even after he was busted in the state case for child abuse.
Kennedy, why is it that the rich, powerful, and well-connected play by different rules? I mean, I think the answer to the question why she was in New Hampshire is she thought she was going to get away with it.
Yeah, she thought she was going to live free, but she's going to die in prison, as she should. Mm-hmm. This is not someone who's just helping out or codependent with Jeffrey Epstein. She is accused of sexually molesting children, and shame on her and everyone else who has protected her. Shame on Alex Azar for giving Jeffrey Epstein the deal he did as a U.S. attorney in Florida. If you watch the Netflix series Filthy Rich about Epstein, it will make your stomach turn. It will make you absolutely sick. You don't have to be a parent of girls. I happen to have two girls, and it made me so incredibly angry. Not only at Epstein, who's waiting in hell for her, but also Ghislaine Maxwell, who abused these children herself and knowingly for years and years extended this cycle and essentially ruined their lives. And I hope the victims have their real day in court and they get to look her in the eye. And their testimony is the nail in her coffin.
Amen to that. And I hope they get every single person. I don't care what political party they're associated with, because these are nasty people.
That's pretty well our program for July 4th. And I just want to reiterate that I wish everyone a happy July 4th, happy and safe. And we've just got to try to come together again and overcome this divisive dynamic that has been created. But like I've said before, though, the mindset of many of our young people was set into place over the last 30 to 40 years. And there's been a bias about viewing America as a legitimate, honorable country. And they've taken and made, dispersions about our Declaration of Independence, about all these old white guys that were slavers that were just setting up a slave country to start with. It was all about slavery and so forth. But if you'll go in and look at the documents that Thomas Jefferson set out and so forth, you'll begin to understand what's going on. And What Jefferson said in one of his aphorisms was that bankers are more dangerous than standing armies. And I just wish that the liberal left, however you want to describe them, would begin to wake up to money problems that we're still facing. We've got a Federal Reserve that's privately owned. They set up all kinds of new mechanisms to do things outside of what they could legally do before. So we're on the edge of maybe a financial currency crisis or collapse. We have this Floyd, George Floyd was murdered, and that's an evil act. That set off the Black Lives Matter and all these other very radical leftist type oriented organizations took advantage of that politically to start bringing the country down and changing the politics and moving the power base over into their hands and attacking the white, you could say white, formerly white dominated power base. And that's what this is about. They're using AOC in there. They're using every other mechanism that they can to move the power base from existing into their hands. But into their hands means that they represent a very, very liberal leftist, in some cases Marxist communism, Maoist in some kind. Instead of Marxist Leninist, they're like Marxist Maoist, you know, which is even a more radical stance. So we have just a cauldron here of confusion and people that can't even tell you today. There have been surveys out here that have been conducted by differing people, and they ask people about Declaration of Independence. What is July 4th about? What does it represent? And many of our young people out here, they don't know a thing about July 4th, even what it amounts to. They can't tell you anything about Thomas Jefferson except some bad things. And they can't tell you anything about the Declaration of Independence, much less the United States Constitution. And sometimes they've done surveys out here and they'll say, who were the American colonists fighting against? And even some of the young people don't even know. They'll say, Africans or something. You know, they'll come up with all kinds of differing answers that are totally off the wall. So our young people just don't have knowledge and a grasp of United States history. And if they've learned anything, they've learned some kind of a very severely, severe and negative outlook about America, not one that accentuates its positives. But they've been indoctrinated to a large extent about the failures and the shortcomings and the negatives of America, but not the strengths and so forth that enabled minorities to finally gain the women that finally gained through the suffrage movement their right to vote, and finally the minorities under the Civil Rights Act to gain civil rights. They were denied this for years, and they shouldn't have been. But eventually this system, operating within this system, did provide them all those rights. And so that's really what it's about. The country can come back. It can make good again. It can heal. And you're not going to find that in any of these communist countries. They're going to destroy you and put you in prison if you protest about anything, about your rights or anything else. But thank you very much for listening. Good night.